welcome to Off the Shelf, Festival of Words. In this Ideas Alive episode, Dr. Hannah Fairbrother from the Health Sciences School discusses increasing health inequalities in the UK due to rising poverty levels and explores young people's potential as advocates and change makers.
Hi, I'm Hannah Fairbrother. I'm a senior lecturer in the Health Sciences School at the University of Sheffield. My research and teaching focus on health inequalities. The King's Fund provide a really helpful definition of health inequalities as avoidable, unfair, and systematic differences in health between different groups of people. They can be linked to our income, where we live, our ethnicity, and other factors. My work primarily focuses on health inequalities related to socioeconomic context. In other words, how our health is influenced by our income, education, job, and where we live. I'm particularly interested in how health inequalities play out for children, young people, and families, and how we can work to ensure all children have the chance to enjoy good health and well-being. This is a long-standing interest and stems from growing up in Sheffield, a city of real contrasts in health and wealth, visiting family in Liverpool, and through voluntary work in Cambridge with young mothers and with children in an underserved area of Paris. In this podcast, I'd like to share some of our findings from a recent project exploring young people's perspectives on and experiences of health inequalities in their everyday lives. But first of all, it might be helpful to spend a couple of minutes looking at the extent of inequality in the UK today. In the UK, there's a long-standing relationship between socioeconomic context and health. Back in 1842, while a doctor could expect to live to 45, a labourer's life expectancy was only 16. Today, there's a sliding scale for health right through the course of our lives, from preconception to end of life, and for lots of different health outcomes, both physical and mental health. In other words, each step up the socioeconomic ladder is associated with better health. However, against a backdrop of rising poverty levels and austerity measures, and exacerbated by the recent pandemic, health inequalities in the UK today are worsening. A 2020 report by Professor Michael Marmot and colleagues highlights that as the gap between the wealthiest and the poorest is rising, so too is the gap between the health and well-being of those at the top and those at the bottom. Socioeconomic inequalities are often reflected geographically. Life expectancy in England is highest in the south and lowest in the northeast. Inequalities are also evident at a smaller scale, so within areas. In London, for example, we see a real discrepancy in life expectancy between areas that are really quite close geographically. This was acutely depicted in the Lives on the Line project back in 2012, which mobilised the Tube map to show the extent of inequality in London. It showed, for example, that between Lancaster Gate and Mile End, just 20 minutes on the Central Line, life expectancy decreases by 12 years. And crossing the Thames between Pimlico and Vauxhall sees life expectancy drop by 6 years. The stations serving the Olympic Park fare badly in contrast with the Olympic volleyball venue at Earl's Court, whose spectators pass through areas with far higher life expectancies and lower child poverty. But it's not just London. In Glasgow, for example, we see the lowest life expectancy in the UK, and men are estimated to live just 55 years in good health, and women 58. There are also important inequalities within the city. There's a 17-year gap in life expectancy across the city for men, and a 13-year gap for women. Closer to home, there are stark health inequalities in Sheffield too. A 2013 report found that average life expectancy falls by 7.5 years for men and almost 10 years for women across the length of the 83 bus route. And this is a route linking Millhouses in the south with Ecclesfield in the north. The 83 bus then is a real journey of inequality. There are still significant inequalities in health and wealth in Sheffield today. Inequalities in health and wealth, then, are real and increasing. So, why explore young people's perspectives on health inequalities? While there have been some studies exploring adults' perceptions on health inequalities, there's been little research exploring the views and experiences of young people. This is a really important gap in the evidence base. Youth activism in other spheres, such as climate change and Black Lives Matter, teaches us that young people have the potential to galvanise support for and contribute to significant policy change. So, now we've touched on the extent of inequality and reflected on the importance of young people's perspectives, let's have a look at the research itself. We worked with young people aged 13 to 21 in underserved communities in the North East, South Yorkshire and London. We asked them, what influences young people's health in your local area? What do health inequalities mean to you? What would you change in your local area to help reduce health inequalities? So, what did young people say? Well, the young people we spoke with had really thoughtful understandings of a range of different factors that influence their opportunity to enjoy good health and well-being. In particular, they described how opportunities to eat healthily, access spaces and activities that had a positive impact on their health and well-being, and housing conditions were very much shaped by the perceived affluence or deprivation of the local area. Let's look at each of these in turn. What did young people have to say about opportunities to eat healthily? Well, the young people we spoke with described a range of barriers to eating healthily, both in terms of their local area and also in relation to family financial and other resources. For example, they talked about the ubiquity of fast food takeaway outlets in their local areas and contrasted this with other, more affluent areas. One of our London participants, for example, said,
when I go to richer parts of London, for example, like when I go to the city where my university is, I don't see that many fast food shops around me, but I see, like, when I'm in my local area, there's so many fast food shops.
In relation to family resources, young people thought that families on a low income were more likely to be time poor, and this could push them towards quicker and easier, but not healthier choices. One participant, for example, described,
people on low incomes often, a lot of time, they work more hours and they can't afford childcare and stuff, so they don't have time to, like, prepare meals which are, like, really healthy.
Another participant eloquently explained how a lack of time
force parents to do, in a way, irrational things, such as constantly sending a fast food order.
While in one group some young people initially found it difficult to understand higher rates of obesity among low-income groups, through the course of their discussion they made sense of the apparently counterintuitive link. One young person said,
you associate free school meals with poorer families who don't necessarily have obesity, if you get me. So the people who've got more money buy the food and then eat it and then get obese. But for me, it's quite interesting that obviously obesity is associated with poorer families.
Another participant responded,
healthier foods tend to be more expensive. Like, you can get one thing which is full fat and it'll be like £2. And if you want to get the fat-free version, it's like £3.50 or something.
And they concluded,
Yeah, I was thinking the same as well. Obviously, the cheaper stuff's worse, if you get me, and more unhealthy.
Young people also highlight competing priorities for people on a low income, like household bills, activities, clothes and school uniform. They described how these had to be prioritised and the consequence was that families could not always afford enough good quality food. Young people's discussions also went beyond the physical health impact of not being able to afford an optimum diet. They talked a lot about the shame they associated with not being seen to do the right thing.
When people have to buy cheaper options, sometimes they get ashamed quite a lot. People saying that they're being right cheap, or it's bad things, or they're being lazy.
In particular, they highlighted how food banks, designed to lessen the impacts of poverty, could represent a real source of embarrassment and shame for those who use them.
There's more food banks and stuff opening, which is a good thing, especially in this area, but some people might be embarrassed to go to one because they don't want to show that they're in poverty. People might shame them for it, definitely. There's like the ideal, you can provide for your family without any help or charity help, and people want to show to be like that, and they don't want people to see them as like not working and being lazy, which obviously is not going to be good on the mental health.
In relation to food then, young people demonstrated really insightful understandings of the everyday challenges of life on a low income and described how different factors compounded each other. Moving on now, let's look at what young people said about healthy spaces. Young people talked about healthy spaces as places where they could go to exercise and or socialise, and talked about their potential to impact both their physical and mental health. Again, they talked about barriers to accessing healthy spaces for young people living in contexts of deprivation. Many young people emphasised the high cost of access to activities and spaces like gyms and sports clubs. And participants in South Yorkshire and the North East also talked about the prohibitive cost of public transport to different leisure spaces. Significantly, London participants highlighted that transport was free for young people, so this was not a barrier for them. Young people described personal experiences of how the high cost of activities played out for them in their everyday lives. One young person in South Yorkshire, for example, highlighted,
"We did badminton for a while, but then they made it £3 a night and barely anyone could afford it. The whole club fell in on itself and stopped because people couldn't pay to attend it."
Young people consistently contrasted expensive or inaccessible activities with their local youth groups, which they described as providing a nearby, safe, welcoming and affordable space to relax and socialise.
"The youth group is good for our health because we get to hang out with our friends and play out back."
Youth groups then were depicted as a really important way of attenuating the impacts of poverty and socioeconomic disadvantage. A small number of participants voiced a belief that irrespective of income levels, young people could always use outdoor spaces for exercise. However, across all groups, participants spoke of how perceptions of safety in their local areas were key obstacles to accessing public spaces. Participants frequently described high levels of crime within their local areas compared to other places.
So when there are a lot of like stabbings going on in the area, people, like their parents, won't let them go outside. So I think if crime could reduce in the area, maybe people would have more access to these mental health spaces that are available.
The phrase, "these mental health spaces," highlights young people's emphasis on the potential for social spaces to positively impact upon their health and well-being. Parks were particularly singled out as places that young people could not enjoy to their full potential due to safety concerns.
"I live near a skate park and sometimes I get intimidated when I'm walking past because a lot of time they're like doing drugs, drinking. On a night time I wouldn't want to be like round there."
There was, however, an acknowledgement from some that risky behaviours like substance use were also related to exclusion or a lack of activities for young people to engage in.
"If there's nothing to do, then we're going to get ourselves into trouble."
Again then, like with opportunities to eat healthily, young people showed a really acute understanding of how different challenges associated with living on a low income in contexts of deprivation compounded each other. So what about housing? How did young people describe the link between housing and health? While young people mentioned the link between housing and physical health, they talked much more about the link between housing and mental health.
I feel like the housing is very cramped in the area. Like it's very cramped. Like it's very overcrowded. And I feel that also does have a big impact on mental health as well. Because it's so overcrowded, you don't have any time to yourself. Any time to think. Literally with people around.
This was particularly important for them during the pandemic, when faced with restrictions around being out of the house. They contrasted the experience of young people who had the space to do schoolwork, concentrate, play, and exercise at home with those who did not. Echoing the perceived shame they associated with not eating the right things, young people described the shame they experienced related to living in the wrong kind of housing.
I've seen people who felt embarrassed over it, not wanting to, like, invite friends over, and then they're just kind of feeling alone.
In this way, young people emphasised how poor housing had a significant impact on their social and emotional well-being. Through everyday stress, embarrassment, and reduced opportunity to socialise in their own homes. So what can we say overall about young people's understandings of and experiences of health inequalities in their everyday lives? As well as highlighting specific factors linking income and health, young people voice their understandings of how health inequalities in England are patterned. They describe both geographical and intergenerational patterns of inequality. They had a clear sense that regional inequalities underlie socioeconomic inequalities in health. Young people from all the different areas described a north-south divide in terms of wealth, and the government was perceived to be responsible for creating and perpetuating this inequality through uneven investment. They also vividly expressed how differences in local economies and labour markets between the north and the south created real-world differences in everyday working conditions. For example, they talked about more technical industries in London and contrasted this with the dominance of hospitality and service sector employment in the north, and they associated this with low pay, insecurity, and low job satisfaction. They were also acutely aware of really local level inequalities too.
There's certain parts of town where you can... They're just known for people being either real poor there or they're barely scraping by. And there's also bits where basically people who are wealthy live. And it's like quite a clear split.
Young people's discussions consistently highlighted the interrelationships between factors linking socioeconomic circumstances and health. The complex causes of health inequalities was both directly and indirectly acknowledged, with understandings rooted in experience. Highlighting their focus on the interrelationship between different factors and the pathways through which inequalities were created and perpetuated, they articulated pathways between root causes, such as local labour market insecurities, and secondary factors, such as not being able to afford to eat healthily.
I think, obviously, because there's high rates of unemployment and that links to not having money and then not, like, spending loads, that all links into, like, buying the cheapest food, which is not naturally healthy. So it all kind of links, really.
The phrase, "it all kind of links, really," encapsulates young people's emphasis on the interwoven nature of inequalities. However, they consistently foregrounded poverty as the root cause of socioeconomic inequalities and health.
If you don't have a very good income, then you can't really live in a very good house. It can affect your health as it is and can cause, like, it can cause stress, which can cause other things.
The constraining impacts of stretched financial resources upon health practices and health outcomes were clearly highlighted.
I feel like money is one of the biggest factors for nearly everything. Diet, mental health.
However, while in general young people's narratives demonstrate their awareness of the socioeconomically disadvantaged nature of their local area, at times their discussions hinted that they associated poverty with others rather than themselves. In particular, one participant from one of the North East groups, the most socioeconomically disadvantaged area we worked in, noted,
"The less fortunate could actually find it harder They're not as privileged as we are in terms of money and wealth.
Whether they explicitly made the link or not themselves, young people's narratives shed light on the importance they attach to the impact of poverty on mental health. Typically, the everyday, chronic stress and strain of living in poverty. They highlight particular pinch points where limited financial resources were acutely stressful.
I think there's a certain level of stress if you go knowing that you've maybe not got as much money and there's going to be certain times of the month where you have to really mind what you're spending.
Mental health was perceived to be a consistent link within a causal cycle of inequality, linked both to a decreased likelihood of engaging in healthy behaviours, such as eating well, engaging in exercise and labour market engagement, and an increased likelihood of engaging in risky behaviours, such as drinking and taking drugs.
Mental health is like connected to so many other things, like reducing physical activities and diet and stuff like that. So mental health is kind of like, it could be like a major cause for the other things to happen. So like comfort foods, for example, eating when you're like depressed or something, or not getting out of bed due to like lack of food, like due to depression. So physical activity is just lower.
So what does all this mean? What are the real implications of this study? Our study highlights an ongoing need for policies that address young people's everyday socioeconomic realities. First and foremost, young people's emphasis on the all-pervasive impact of poverty and their opportunities to enjoy good health really underscores the importance of pro-equity policies to end poverty. Their foregrounding of the uneven socioeconomic patterning of time and its impact on health and well-being, particularly in relation to food preparation, highlights the need to tackle long and often unsociable working hours for people living in the most deprived neighbourhoods. Further, there's an ongoing need for policies that address the conditions and impacts of unsuitable housing, and that make it easier for young people, particularly those in disadvantaged areas, to eat more healthily and access health-promoting activities and spaces. While local authorities have responsibility to implement important practical changes here, like enhancing green spaces and parks, making streets safer, and establishing cycle lanes, this needs to be enabled by funding. Local authorities have seen their budgets consistently cut, and reductions in funding allocations have been higher in the poorest areas of the country. In particular, young people in this study highlighted that youth clubs afford a safe place to socialise with peers, access information and advice, and form trusting relationships with professionals. Yet again, there have been significant drops in funding for youth services. Young people's perspectives really resonate with Professor Michael Marmot's recent stark warning. Writing for The Guardian in April, Marmot highlights, "Dignity. It is fundamental to who we are and our place in society. One way to deprive people of the opportunity to lead dignified lives is to take away the means to meet their material needs. It is undignified to have to resort to food banks to feed your children, to wear two coats indoors against the cold, to plead against eviction because of an inability to pay the rent, to deny children a birthday party because of cost. The poorest people in the UK are about to experience a fresh wave of such indignities. These psychosocial assaults will be joined by the physical ill effects of poverty." It doesn't have to be this way, though. Tangible differences can be created by pro-equity policies, like increasing the minimum wage. This could help people to heat their homes, eat healthily, and not have to constantly worry about making ends meet. Gordon Brown sums up the action required in a recent Guardian newspaper article with the headline, "Fuel poverty is creating a left-out generation that will never recover from the scars." He says we need a new strategy to end family poverty that will show how a compassionate society can afford to take action and indeed cannot afford not to. Our project recognises young people's potential as advocates, change makers and co-producers in inspiring and driving a real commitment to tackle health inequality.
Thank you for listening. For more information about the festival, please visit www.offtheshelf.org.uk. We'd love to hear your thoughts and responses on social media. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.